at the beginning, I kind of talked about the whakapapa of individualized funding or person-directed funding, and it does have a whakapapa. It goes back a long way, so we can't forget the past, but what does the future look like? So any opportunities to engage, support each other. I know, Michelle, you've probably got some ideas about that from where whānau can support each other who have been, not champions, but have probably been doing IF for a while and know some of the tips and tricks. And just give us feedback if we're coming, I've worked in community for most of my life, so if we're coming across as being too bureaucratic or the system is too hard, hopefully you can find a way to tell us that and give feedback on what would be better. Really open to all of that. I'll hand it over to my colleagues.
Yeah, the NASC, in this case, Te Akora Trust, have always had a conversation with people before we meet them and have talked about the outcomes people are trying to achieve, what their aspirations are, what their needs are. And so we usually have some pretty robust information about the person's situation and what they're trying to aim for. We then support them to put together a plan around how are you going to do that? You know, given the amount of money you've got, given what it is you're trying to achieve, how can you make the best use of this funding to try and do that? And that looks different for everybody. That plan is put in writing, it's agreed by both people, and a copy goes back to NASC, and then that's reviewed annually or more often if needed. And that becomes quite important when it comes to discuss some of the discussions down the track, and in particular with purchasing and linking purchases back to needs and aspirations and outcomes that people are trying to achieve.
For me, the difference is, so when I think about individualized funding, I don't think of it as a support. I think of it as a way of funding that support. So in terms of respite, there are many different ways that you can get respite. So carer support is more of an informal way of getting respite. I find it's a lot easier for families, especially when they're really, really stressed. Because it's a paper form that you fill out and you chuck it in the post, whereas individualised funding comes with a much higher responsibility. And so there you have to do a lot more paperwork. There are contracts involved. You've got to make sure that you get the invoices through fortnightly. And because it is an hourly wage as opposed to a financial contribution, I find that parents will worry about it a little bit more, because obviously if this is someone's salary, then that's a bit more stress on them, as opposed to, you know, I'm paying you some babysitting money.
To bear in mind that if you're wanting to pay a person as opposed to spend the money on an activity or make a purchase that's going to support the disabled person, then you'd need to be entering either a contracting or employment arrangement with the person. So that's one of the key differences where there's a person involved. But yeah, they are both forms of respite in and of themselves.
It's probably important for whānau to understand the difference between the purpose of the two. So carer support is in the name. It's there to give the primary carer or the person who's providing most of the support within the household the break. And I think sometimes that might get a wee bit lost. By default, the disabled family member might have the break as well, but the primary purpose is for the person who's providing all the goodness and assistance and support to have the break. Whereas IF respite is about the disabled person having the break, and by default, the whānau or the person providing the support gets to have the break.
NASC perspective, I'd say we are like any service where we've also been impacted by health, and it shouldn't take that long. 6 months is a very long time to wait. I believe our wait time is usually about kind of 8 weeks, but if people are ever struggling to get in contact with us, we do have a website, we do have an info@taikura email, and that's usually sometimes a bit faster to make contact with us. Obviously we want to try make things as easy as possible and get supports in place as quickly as possible.
There is the option to what we call self-manage your payroll. So there's typically a couple of options. Either you subcontract your IEF host to manage your payroll for them, and they keep record of leave, they pay the tax, the ACC employer levies, KiwiSaver contributions, all that sort of thing, or you choose to contract. A good reference point is probably the IRD website. If people Google IRD individualized funding, there's some really good guidance on that page. And as hosts, we would require to see the letter provided by IRD that somebody has registered as being an employer. And from there, when they submit invoices to us to be paid on their behalf so that they can pay their staff, that's the evidence that we need to put that through. And it then becomes their responsibility to liaise directly with IRD about those payments that I mentioned.
And then we skipped the question about the host. So what is the host? Why do we need a host? We might have tackled that quite a bit a while ago, but can we expound that a little bit?
Taki Watanga, in his, her, their own time and space.
Being cool. The kids that are in his class that have autism, super cool.
Autism's about a different perspective on life.
And once you've met one autistic person, you've met one autistic person.
There is nothing wrong with having autism, you know. The hardest thing with autism and intellectual disability and that is sometimes accepting it.
They bring change. They are non-judgmental.
Being different ways to thinking.
I'm autistic. If you don't look autistic, it is a very ableist statement.
Autism is a label. Forget the label and just live as normal life as possible. Autism is about hope.
Taki Watanga. Love Not Cure, exploring autism one strength at a time.
Hi everyone. Hope all of you are doing okay. Nice to meet you all. Thank you for this, Jerome, for this session, for organizing this one. I'm having problems with my camera. It's coming on and off, but I hope you don't mind with that. First and foremost, I just want to thank everyone for having this session with me, and thanks for the whole team. I know you're all busy, and we'll just go straight to the point. This is recorded. Everyone is okay with that? Yep. So I'm recording this session, and I will be publishing this on the podcast. And so just a quick background or a bit of introduction for everyone, if you don't mind. So at least we know your name, your organization you're coming from, and what you're doing.
So my name's Michelle Smith, and I work with LifeWise in our health and disability office, and we are an individualized funding host.
Good morning, I'm Louise. I'm a Connect Case Manager for Te Kura Trust.
Hi, Lloyd. I'm Luella. I'm with Louise from Te Kura Trust. I'm here to provide moral support to my colleague Louise and our other colleagues in the community.
And kia ora, my name is Claire Ryan, and I work at Waikaha, Ministry of Disabled People, and I am a portfolio manager there and work in individualised funding and, well, anywhere that has a flexible fund, actually. So, yeah, that's me.
My name is Lloyd, and I am the host of the podcast Taki Watanga. Some of the concerns that the community is raising is around individualized funding. And most questions that I have listed are basic questions that I know that some of them may be answerable by navigating or going through the web. But a lot of them are technical for other parents. Everyone thinks differently and is not technical enough to understand the whole application process. The main objective is for us to be able to give clarity about individual funding, about care support, and what's going to be the step forward for FANO. We can start. What is individualized funding?
Individualized funding is not new. It's been around for probably close to 20 years, and it was born out of disabled people feeling frustrated with the current system of service providers, and so started to work towards or demanded that they be given autonomy and that their self-determination was acknowledged, and so personalised budgets kind of came into play there. So individualised funding is It's a funding mechanism for people to have choice, flexibility, and control over how their day-to-day maybe supports or assistance occurs, or and that can happen through maybe engaging with support people. But and if we fast track to now, and COVID got us moving quite quickly into, and Michelle will know this from an operational side of things, moved very quickly into flexibility, which has been amazing and challenging. And that flexibility has meant that people can treat their individualized funding more like a personal budget that might be observed in some of the EGL sites. But it's all about meeting the person's need. It's a individualized funding is a government fund, which makes it different to any funding that might come through MSD. So with because it's government funded, it's very specific to it being a contribution to the cost of any unique needs you have because of your impairment, or how the community might disable you and restrict your access. So it's there to sort of open up people's lives. I was just going to say it's not mandatory, so you don't have to have individualized funding. And at the moment, I just thought of some other important things that whānau might want to know about that. At the moment, how it's allocated against what we call the home and community support standards. So that's personal care and household management, and also IF respite. And because we haven't, we're working through the systems transformation side of things, but at the moment they're the guiding the guiding principles, or they're not principles, it's how you get your allocation. And Louise knows more about this than I do, but it's really the mechanism we're using to support whānau to get their budget. But once you have the budget, it's then about how you plan the outcomes, how you want your life to happen. So that might be quite confusing about why it's personal care and household management. It's just that they're the guides that we have at the moment.
Thanks for that, Claire. So you did mention about respite care. So what's the difference between individualist funding? And we have carer support, which is respite care as well.
I was going to say that one was one of the ones that was highlighted for me, but I'm happy if you want to take that one.
Claire? No, you go.
I guess for me, the difference is, so when I think about individualized funding, I don't think of it as a support. I think of it as a way of funding that support. So in terms of respite, there are many different ways that you can get respite. So carer support is more of an informal way of getting respite. I find it's a lot easier for families, especially when they're really, really stressed. Because it's a paper form that you fill out and you chuck it in the post, whereas individualized funding comes with a much higher responsibility. And so there you have to do a lot more paperwork. There are contracts involved. You've got to make sure that you get the invoices through fortnightly. And because it is an hourly wage as opposed to a financial contribution, I find that parents will worry about it a little bit more, because obviously if this is someone's salary, then that's a bit more stress on them, as opposed to, I'm paying you some babysitting money.
In the assumption that I have the individualized funding, I can still have that care support and use that IF as care support?
Yep, so you can have both. You can have carer support days and you can have individualized funding respite, or you can technically have carer support days and have that financial amount added into your IF budget.
I'm just trying to rephrase this one. So in the assumption that I have a care support, I have individualized funding, I consume all my care support, I can use this one, individualized funding as part of my respite as well?
You could, but as Louise mentioned, you'd need to bear in mind that if you're wanting to pay a person as opposed to spend the money on an activity or make a purchase that's going to support the disabled person, then you'd need to be entering either a contracting or employment arrangement with the person. So that's one of the key differences where there's a person involved. But, yeah, they are both forms of respite in and of themselves.
It's probably important for whānau to understand the difference between the purpose of the two. So carer support is in the name. It's there to give the primary carer or the person who's providing most of the support within the household the break. And I think sometimes that might get a wee bit lost. By default, the disabled family member might have the break as well, but the primary purpose is for the person who's providing all the goodness and assistance and support to have the break, whereas IF respite is about the disabled person having the break, and by default, the whānau or the person providing the support gets to have the break. But it's probably a really important thing in terms of, and also that carer support is a contribution into the household, and so that's why it's not taxed. It's kind of a contribution to help pay for those costs. So, yeah, I think it's important to remember that because it can get a bit tangled up. But what my colleagues too are saying about the easiness of it is very relevant.
And I think particularly, Claire, too, since that flexibility that you mentioned in 2020, what you can do with carer support and IF are, you know, from what I can see, more closely aligned than they might have because the same purchasing guidelines apply to the use of both. So, yeah, that's made it a little easier for people too. And I think more people are probably using their carer support funding than they might have 3 or 4 years ago too.
Purchasing guidelines, we won't talk about it because this is going to be like the NAS support, right? They should be able to provide the information on the guidelines itself. Or what are the criteria to access this support? Do we need a formal assessment? I know this is pretty black and white, but do we need formal assessment coming from any specialists or the GP assessments would do?
So you just need to go to your NASC. So the same as accessing any other support.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The needs assessment, and then it would be a discussion based off the needs that were highlighted. So again, it would be if you need it. Personal care need, if you have a home management need, or if there's a need for respite. So it'll be one of the options that is presented to you.
We are going to go into the individualized funding itself. Employee, employer, mean if, what does this mean? If the support will be applied within, can it be applied within the household, or it is a requirement that it needs to be outside of our household?
Okay, so look, I'll respond to that, Lloyd. As Claire mentioned, COVID accelerated some real changes that had been planned anyway, and one of them was the ability for paid whānau carers who might live in the same home as the disabled person. So yes, that is entirely possible. What that looks like in terms of who is the employee and who is the employer really does vary according to the family situation. But some examples that we've seen are where mum might be the main carer, so she becomes the employee. Dad or her partner might become her employer. Sometimes with a disabled person who's an adult who has the capacity and capability, they might choose to operate as the employer and may employ mum or a sibling or whoever to support them. Occasionally there are other arrangements that are able to be made, particularly in single parent families where perhaps there's not somebody who can obviously act as the employer, but those situations are best probably discussed with the IF host at the time to try and find a workaround. Very often the employer is also what we call the agent or the person that is responsible for managing and overseeing the budget, how it's utilised, signing off the timesheets, those kinds of things. So, you know, IEF does come with an element of responsibility. As Claire said, that's a little different to carer support.
What about timesheet? So we are going to go a little bit in terms of tax filing. I understand that if there's a host, which is a different question later on, if there's a host, the host can manage the taxes correct me if I'm wrong, can manage the taxes. So all you have to do is your timesheets and stuff. If I will have my own, let's say I have my own accountant, for example, do I still need my host to do the tax work for me, or I can just transfer all of them to my accountant?
Right. So there is the option to what we call self-manage your payroll. So there's typically a couple of options. Either you subcontract your IEF host to manage your payroll for them and they keep record of leave, they pay the tax, the ACC employer levies, KiwiSaver contributions, all that sort of thing, or you choose to contract. A good reference point is probably the IRD website. If people Google IRD individualized funding, there's some really good guidance on that page. And as hosts, we would require to see the letter provided by IRD that somebody has registered as being an employer. And from there, when they submit invoices to us to be paid on their behalf so that they can pay their staff, that's the evidence that we need to put that through, and it then becomes their responsibility to liaise directly with IRD about those payments that I mentioned.
And then we skipped the question about the host. So what is the host? Why do we need a host? We might have tackled that quite a bit a while ago, but can we expound that a little bit?
So a host contractors providers to Faikaha. So we contract to 9 IF host providers, and the role of the host is to be in a support role. So it's to support people that have individualized funding to kind of navigate the system. IF is, I mean, I've never used it. I've only supported people to use it. And there's quite a lot of information to take on board, what you've touched on around the employment side of things, tax. And usually when people hear the word tax, it's quite a frightening word. So the idea of the host is kind of to translate all that kind of technical stuff and to make it easy. That's one of the EGL principles, is that, you know, things need to be easy. So that's what the host role is, and they are there to help you with your planning, to set out the budget, and kind of, you know, probably heard the word connector used in the Enabling Good Lives sites, but really probably, Michelle, a lot of what you do now is about connecting people into the community, connecting whānau with each other, coming up with ideas, and hopefully kind of driving the host service too. It's driven by disabled people in whānau, tangata whaikaha Māori. It's really important that if there's something that whānau need in the space, that they let the host know that there's a gap in their learning. But to be fair, I think some people are quite nervous because it does all sound quite scary. And so the host is there to sort of ease that. Whereas the NASC is, I think your question there about the difference between host and NASC, is that the NASC are the people that do the allocation. They talk about what your needs are or what outcomes you want to have in your life, and they support you to get the upfront funding. But after that, it moves over to the host.
And we're pretty hot on, you know, one of our roles is kind of partnering with and walking alongside the disabled person and their whānau. Claire mentioned navigating the system. I guess that's part of the reason for today's podcast. That can be really tricky sometimes. I think increasingly advocacy is a big part of what we do as hosts as well, and coaching people to be able to self-advocate. Because as you've probably gathered, the ministry, Faikaha, are the funder, Taikura Trust in this case, are the NASC, and there are NASCs all around the country. And then as Claire said, there's a whole lot of hosts as well. So while we each have quite separate roles, we actually collaborate and talk together quite often. And it's all about trying to get the best outcomes for the disabled person and ultimately empowering them under the Enabling Good Lives approach to be able to do that for themselves going forward.
If I will have, for example, I'm able to transition to individualized funding, Can I still contact my local NASC, or my contact is now the host?
So carer support people usually manage pretty autonomously. We can give very high level advice. Otherwise, we'd point them to the Whakaha website. It's got some great information about carer support, how to use it, how to claim. But specifically related to individualised funding, you would talk directly with your host for sure. Most hosts have a kind of case management coaching role where you'd be assigned a go-to person that you could contact and chat with.
To apply for this individualized funding, we will have to use the Tō Oranga Pai, or the Living Well Plan, right? And this is a requirement. It's another form that we need to fill out. And it's not a different organization. It's just a form of or a plan. Is that correct?
The NASC, in this case, Te Kura Trust, have always had a conversation with people before we meet them and have talked about the outcomes people are trying to achieve, what their aspirations are, what their needs are. And so we usually have some pretty robust information about the person's situation and what they're trying to aim for. We then support them to put together a plan around how are you going to do that? You know, given the amount of money you've got, given what it is you're trying to achieve, how can you make the best use of this funding to try and do that? And that looks different for everybody. That plan is put in writing, it's agreed by both people, and a copy goes back to NASC, and then that's reviewed annually or more often if needed. And that becomes quite important when it comes to discuss some of the discussions down the track, and in particular with purchasing and linking purchases back to needs and aspirations and outcomes that people are trying to achieve.
And how long is the end-to-end process? I heard there's a story that someone had like an experience of like about 6 months until I'm not sure if the NASC or I forgot if the NASC or it's the host that came back after 6 months. Is that an ideal process? I don't know the whole story, but it's just something that I wanted to, at least we have an idea how long that process might take place.
Yeah, look, I'll leave Louise to comment about NASC, but we know that, you know, we're all fairly snowed under at the moment. So there might be a bit of a process from the time that you are either referred or self-referred to the NASC before you can get your needs assessment. Once the needs assessment's been completed and NASC and the family or disabled person have agreed on the types of support they're eligible for and are going to work for them. As soon as we get the referral, we're usually in touch as the host within 24, 48 hours. There are actually some contractual requirements around that in terms of days. And then we make a time to catch up with the person. Again, there are some contractual requirements of about 10 days. So it's a reasonably short period. And the only times that I'm aware of where that would be extended out would be where something is happening within the family and the family needs to delay for some reason. If something unexpected happened at our end where somebody was away sick on the day and we'd just, you know, reschedule an appointment. But usually our experience is well and truly within a month of receiving a referral, somebody should be up and going. With all of the information that they need to get going. So, 6 months feels like a long time to me, but without knowing the individual situation, it's a bit difficult to comment. Louise, do you want to say a bit more about that initial process?
From a NASC perspective, I'd say we are like any service where we've also been impacted by health, and it shouldn't take that long. 6 months is a very long time to wait. I believe our wait time is usually about kind of 8 weeks. But if people are ever struggling to get in contact with us, we do have a website, we do have an info@taikura email, and that's usually sometimes a bit faster to make contact with us. Obviously we want to try make things as easy as possible and get supports in place as quickly as possible.
We do have a contact centre phone number, so it's on our website, and particularly around any of these issues, we also have a complaints process at Whaikaha. So often people don't want to complain because they think that I think people complain because they just worry about the impact, but it's really important that we get the feedback, and if whānau are not feeling comfortable in doing that, they can talk to their local disability information, what's called a DIAS, disability information, and I don't know what that, I can't remember that,
but it's advisory.
Advisory service, that's it, sorry, I had a blank. And so they're dotted right throughout New Zealand. So a lot of the success around any of these self-directed, person-directed funding mechanisms will be connection with other people and support from their peer group. And we're really trying to build that in Whaikaha. So it would be great if whānau and disabled people could make contact with us to give us feedback on what's working and what isn't and all those sorts of things. And just the other point around carer support is that there is no hosts don't work in the carer support space. So once you do have your carer support days, you can also turn that into a budget. You times it by the number of days you've got in $80, and that gives you the dollar amount. So we're working more to like a flexible budget there. But if you get stuck about the purchasing guidelines or not sure about things, again, you can contact the contact centre. And anything that's kind of a bit more unique does get elevated up to me. And so I have a look at it. And it's not to approve or disapprove. It's just to make sure that your funding is safe. That's a mechanism. But you don't have the same supports as you do with a host with carer support. We have different supports.
So of the time allocation, what does the unit means? There were questions about what's the, I have this unit. I don't know what it is and how do I convert it to, I don't know, time allocation or money or budget.
Yeah, so that's where the host comes in, Lloyd. That's a really common conversation that we're having with people up front. So as you, I'm sure people can appreciate, Whaikaha and Taikura have got to have a mechanism by which they allocate support. And so that's done via units. So when people see the outcome of the NASC assessment, they might see that for personal care, they've got 364 units of support. Each of those units for personal care and household management is paid at $36. And you're right, people sometimes get confused and think that's an hour, and it's not, and I'll explain why in a minute. For IF respite care, it's different again. Each respite unit is paid at $10. So as hosts, what we then do with the person is we take the number of units and we multiply it by those dollar amounts to get a total budget amount, and then we use that to help somebody work out how they're going to make best use of this. The reason that $36 is not an hourly rate is because from that money, the person needs to consider the annual leave accrual for any employees, the KiwiSaver employer contribution, the ACC employer contribution, thinking about people working on public holidays and accruing alternate leave, training, all those kinds of things, the payroll fees that they would be required to pay if they're subcontracting out their payroll. So typically people are paying within the agreed support worker hourly rates that have been agreed by Pay Equity. That's not mandatory, but they're a good guide in terms of being able to stay within your budget. But it does mean that if the NASC has said you've got 7 hours a week personal care and you choose to pay $30 or $35 an hour, you will very likely not have 7 hours a week to use once all of those other employment-related costs are also deducted from the budget. So that's where the host comes in to help you work out all that nitty-gritty.
Just one question, perhaps. The individualized funding and support, I know there's some information that are not being transitioned down. I don't know, there might be something that parents as well need to be proactive, which I totally admit as well. Sometimes because we're too busy with a lot of stuff happening in life and we tend to forget. In my case, this is just me for my personal experience. I don't know any other story from other parents, but for me to be proactive and make sure that the support and care that I can provide to my children is the right support and care. So what do you think we can do so that this includes parents and, of course, Whaikaha and other not-for-profit organization to support our children, disabled children, family who are also struggling? What do you think we can do to make things better for all of the community?
It's a great question, and it is. It's the whole purpose of Whaikaha and Ministry of Disabled People was to close the gap between government and community. So we have what is called a tripartite approach to our mahi and our work. So it's working with Māori, working with disabled people, tangata whaikaha, and government. So I think it's about all of us doing the work, Lloyd, you know, that and connecting in, trying to be in the community more from government perspective. So that is sharing information. So knowing that you're all busy doing your thing, but any opportunities to have forums like this, any opportunities to give guidance and feedback about direction, because at the beginning I kind of talked about the whakapapa of individualised funding or person-directed funding, and it does have a whakapapa. It goes back a long way, so we can't forget the past, but what does the future look like? So any opportunities to engage, support each other. I know, Michelle, you've probably got some ideas about that from where whānau can support each other who have been not champions but have probably been doing IF for a while and know some of the tips and tricks. And just give us feedback if we're coming, I've worked in community for most of my life, so if we're coming across as being too bureaucratic or the system is too hard, hopefully you can find a way to tell us that and give feedback on what would be better. Really open to all of that. I'll hand it over to my colleagues.
Yeah, it's a big question, but I definitely think, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it's about all of us working in partnership. You're right, Lloyd, people's lives are busy, they're complex, there's a lot going on, and we're really conscious of that as a host. We try to, certainly LifeWise, we try to be as proactive as we can, but we also invite people to contact us at any time. You know, I will often say to people, please don't not contact me because you think I'm too busy. That's my job to manage my busy. If you've got a question, what have you, phone us, email us, text us, and we commit to getting back to people within 48, 72 hours at LifeWise. Often it's sooner, but it really just depends what else is going on at our end. The more that we know about your situation, the more that we can kind of guide you and make suggestions about what might work. And I'm sure it's the same for Takura, you know, right up front. The more information you can give people about the day-to-day reality and what your hopes and dreams are and the challenges that you're trying to overcome, the better that we can all work together to try and, get a great life for the person. And certainly being guided, you know, by those enabling good lives principles, it's really reasonable for people to ask us questions if they feel for some reason we're not. We're all learning and we're very open to suggestions, challenges. As Claire said, there's a complaints process for everybody and, you know, we're open to feedback, definitely.
Okay. All right, thank you. So we have less than 1 minute for this session. Anything else that we can add quickly? So I'm very grateful for this time that you spent with me, and I'm so happy that we had this session. So at least to clarify a lot of things, I would like to thank you all for your time and appreciate you being here with me. And I will be releasing this podcast at some point, and I will be sharing the links with all of you once it's released. Right. Thank you, Davis Bam.
Thank you, Lloyd.
All right, thanks. Appreciate it.